Attention Crusaders, you are now listening to Vox Arcana, a production of Holosuite Media. By the will of the immortal Emperor of Mankind, it has been decreed that the following broadcast of Vox Arcana may not be suitable for all ages. The views expressed on this Voxcast are solely those of the individual providing them and do not represent the opinion of this station, website, or any affiliated partner. Audience discretion is advised.
Oi!
What is it, you maggot?
Tahirmis is on their way to Arcona. They're gonna get there before us.
You worthless git. Who cares if they get there before us? Either way, we'll crump them good.
I know, but they've already been shooting at the spiky Hermes for weeks now.
What? Get the boys on the rocks. It's time for war!
Greetings, Crusaders. Welcome to Vox Arcona Mission 32, recording on Saturday, April 9th, 2016, and coming to you from the Battlefleet Charon in the Segmentum Obscurus. I am Yumite, and I am pleased to share the Fleet's Vox Relay with Orksa. How are you doing today, man?
Yeah, I'm doing pretty well, Gig. How's it going for you?
Yeah, not too bad. What have you been up to this week?
Yeah, okay, well this week, I have actually done a little bit in Eternal Crusade this week, so well done, me.
No.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, mainly I've been moving. I've moved to a new place, better internet connection. So if anybody was noticing me dropping in the last week's episode, shouldn't be an issue anymore. However, yeah, so this doesn't come up in any other part of the our podcast, our show notes. So I'm going to tell you what I've done in-game right now. I jumped in, I want to try out the multi-melter, and I did, and I found out I suck at the game now. I don't know why, I don't know what's happened, but I was in there for about all of 10 minutes, and I just got wrecked. It was horrible. I spawned, and before my screen had loaded, I was already bleeding out.
Oh.
So, to be fair, that one's not my fault, but the other kills weren't far off.
Fair enough. Yeah, well, I've been in-game a little bit this week.
Yeah.
Although I've been working on my projects for the most part. I've been working on my story. I'm partway through writing chapter 3. I've been trying to come up with a concept for the Black Library competition. I've been writing down a few ideas and trying to see if anything pans out.
What have you got so far? Or are you keeping it under wraps?
I'm going to keep it under wraps for now, just in case anyone who listens to the podcast decides that it's a good idea.
Yeah, it's got a bit of that writer's paranoia.
Yeah.
That's fair.
But no, I'm working on a few ideas. I'm also trying to teach myself a program called Unity 3D. It's a game creation engine. Because I have a number of ideas when it comes to creating computer games of my own. I've always had a bit of a passion in regards to that, I want to learn that program. So yes.
Nice. Yeah. A while back, I tried a bit of the old 3D modeling myself. Didn't get very far because life.
Yeah.
But yeah, we're all here playing computer games. We all have a passion for it. Are you making good progress?
Well, a little bit. I'm working on a couple of projects there. I'm kind of working on an FPS, and I've had ideas for a 40k inspired fighting game, which I think might work. I've got quite a big game design document written up for that. Just spent most of my holiday working on.
As long as you stick with saying inspired,
yes,
because otherwise, you better have a big lawyer team.
We know how litigious Games Workshop can be.
They're such a friendly company.
Oh, yeah. Totally. They love their fan base. Cool. So yes, let's have a look at Into the Warp, Eternal Crusade, Into the Warp 59. Not a massive amount going on, but there is some very interesting stuff happening with the game. The war party system is coming into play now. Pretty much a standard MMO party matchmaking system. They showed it off in the Into the Warp. You can kind of go in and start a war party of your own, like a private party, or you can join a party in progress. Again, pretty much standard. If you play any MMO that has a matchmaking system of some description, you will see exactly how that kind of system works. Although apparently, according to the team, karaoke parties will be for Eldar only. those who want to play Eldar should be having a lot of fun there.
I've got to say, I feel like I missed an in-joke when they started talking about that. Has this been mentioned before?
No, I think it was just an off-the-cuff joke by Nathan.
Oh, that Nathan.
And Katie, I think.
Oh, dear. Yeah, so, I mean, when it comes to this, the entire news segment here could have been, they are coming. However, there was a little bit of a mention about other things they were thinking about, which were kind of related to it, but were not actually coming yet. They did talk briefly about the possibility of having multiple factions. Would they be doing 2-on-2 or 2v1 or anything? And they basically said, we can do that, but we won't, at least not yet.
Yeah, but, not yet.
Yeah, I mean, obviously they're still trying to balance it on 1v1 faction wise. No, so good to know that it's something they are aware that people might want, but yeah, it's not happening anytime soon.
Indeed. The major bulk of the Into the Warp this week was really about the Eldar. They decided to show off the Eldar in a little bit of detail. It was good for the most part. I have a few issues with what they showed and what they were talking about. Overall, I think the Eldar are looking okay. Obviously, everything's still work in progress. I think the major thing that jumped out at me really was the colours. Obviously, they've yet to put in like textures and things like this, but in my opinion, the fire dragons just look too bright. On the models that they've got right now, it's a really bright orange and a really bright yellow, and I just think that needs to be muted a little bit. Otherwise, it just comes across as too much with everything else going on around them. You know?
Yeah, it's. I mean, it's always a tough call with Eldar, isn't it? I mean, they've always, even on the tabletop, they're a ridiculous-looking army, aren't they? Because they're they're yellows and purples and oranges, and they're just vibrant and bright and completely not in fitting with the rest of the grimdark nature of it almost. I mean, their fluff is great grimdark wise, but not their models so much. And so, where do you draw the line? Are you going to say, well, actually we're going to take the Eldar a slightly different way, or are they going to keep them super bright?
Yeah, I mean, Katsu mentioned on one of the previous episodes that he was once looking for a competitive Eldar army list, and he said if anyone ever finds one that doesn't start with the line "paint your army pretty," to let him know, because I think most Eldar players kind of resign themselves to the fact that they're not a hugely competitive army, and that they just go with getting points on the hobby side of it. So yeah, I think it is about striking that balance of finding the character of the Eldar and kind of balancing it with everything else around them, especially in a game like this where everything is so muted, so dark. Wow. To have an army that's so bright and colourful, it's a little bit off-putting.
Well, first off, how things have changed They are now, I assume you know, they are the most powerful codex right now, right?
Oh yeah, yeah, now they are.
Okay, okay, good, good. Yeah. How things have changed, yeah. Sixth edition did wonders for the Eldar. So I can't say too much about my opinions on how they looked in game when it comes to the colors, because I'm colorblind. So they looked fine to me, yes.
Fair enough.
Yeah. When it comes to the models themselves, I know there was a lot of butt talk, you know, there's a lot of booty going on.
That ass.
Yeah. And we can pretend that model was a female model, but we know it wasn't. That's fine too, but you know, keep it in mind.
I did have to wonder actually, when Katie first appeared as the Fire Warrior, I had to double take. Mm-hmm. I think thought to myself, is that a female model? But no, it was all male. when Brent first actually spawned into the game, he was actually playing a Striking Scorpion, which was obviously in a standing stance, but personally, when they said this is, they actually mentioned that this is like the melee stance versus the range stance and things like that, I thought, is that how you're going to have it permanently? Because in my mind at least, the Striking Scorpion shouldn't just be standing there straight backed. In my opinion, they should be a little bit more hunched. I think there's been a few instances in the art where a Striking Scorpion has been shown to be sort of crouched and sort of, you know, what's the word? In a sort of a predatory-like stance. Personally, I think they should be a little bit more hunched in game, but that's just my humble opinion.
I know exactly what you mean. Yeah, I agree. I'm sure they will, but at the same time, they do have to think of hitboxes. And are they suddenly making them too small and difficult hits, etc.?
Yeah, I mean, on that, they did mention that the Striking Scorpions will have a quote-unquote camouflage mechanic, not to invisibility, so we know a little bit more about their stealth mechanic in-game now. I think Brent said that they're not going to be invisible on your screen, but if they're far enough away and you're not quite looking at them right, you may not see them. Interesting.
Yeah, it would definitely be cool to see how that works out. Although, from what you just said there, is the implication that they won't be on your radar at all?
Possibly not. Yeah, possibly not. They may not show up on the radar screen.
Well, I think that it's a cool idea.
Yeah, the chainsaw looked alright. I don't think they've got the animation working on the chain on the teeth just yet, but that did look alright. And as I think if they played around with the stance a little bit, I think that could look really intimidating.
I was okay with the chainsaw. I could see the teeth moving.
I couldn't see anything moving on there.
Oh yeah, if you're moving around, you're not going to see it at all. But they did move rather slowly. Yeah.
Fair enough. They did mention also that Swooping Hawks will have a gliding mechanic in-game, which will be quite interesting to see, because obviously right now what we have is the assault in terms of flying units. So, yeah, I think the gliding mechanic might be quite interesting to see.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see how that actually plays into the game, because I mean, to assume that you do actually have to be up high to begin your glide, and there's not like an initial boost and then glide, that's not very useful. So I would assume.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be quite interesting to see, because I can see these units doing like mini strafing runs. You know, I think that'd be quite interesting.
Well, that does sound cool. Yeah, I'll give you that. However, how are they going to get high enough to begin that strafing run? Because there aren't many places.
Well, I mean, something like the fortress map, for instance. I mean, you could quite easily see them jumping off the top of those defensive points gliding out, doing a strafing run, and kind of coming back towards the fortress, back to safety.
Oh yeah, sure. But when it comes to, for example, whatever it's called, not Tarius Refinery, I want to say Black Bolt something.
Black Bolt Defense.
Is that the one where you go from point A to point B to point C?
That is a 4-point map, which is domination. You can grab anyone you like.
Oh, okay. Well, Tarius, we all know the one I'm talking ABC. About. Tarius Refinery is the new one, though, isn't it? Or the newest.
Newer.
The one that's not the fortress. Yeah.
But it's got point A right at the top of a massive building.
Yes. Yeah. So, not that one. The one that we all know that I mean, that no one can remember the name of. That one. There aren't really any high points on that.
Oh, do you mean Ellipsis? Like the first.
That could be the one. Yes, yeah, that's the one.
Yeah, Ellipsis Refinery.
There you go, that's the one.
Yeah, I mean, there's not many, like, hugely high points. There are a couple of high points there, but not massively high. But then it depends on how they go about it, because in the fluff at least, Sweeping Hawks packs are gravitic packs. So, in theory at least, they should be able to lift themselves up a certain amount of distance before gliding. But, like I say, that depends on how they go about putting the fluff into the game.
No, sure. But I mean, yeah, if they kind of give you that initial thing that you would get from just a Assault Marine's back jump back, so you get that initial boost, then it's fine. Then you can let them glide as long as they want. No issues.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I mean, that's how I see it working in game, at least, is that initial boost upwards, and then you start gliding, so.
Yeah, that works for me, sure.
there was a little bit of a faux pas, shall we say, while Brent was running around the map as a fire dragon. He came up to a low wall, and he vaulted over the wall, and the fire dragon did a little bit of a somersault vault over the wall, and they were like, oh shit, we shouldn't have done that. Apparently this vaulting animation won't be on the fire dragons, but they didn't mention who it will be on. So I'm starting to think to myself, who will that be on then?
Exactly. Now, we've kind of got to assume it would still be Eldar.
Oh.
I mean, I can't think of any other race doing that flip. But then, why wouldn't they just tell us, oh, well, that's on the Striking Scorpions?
I think it's on the Howling Banshees.
Okay, but, I mean, why were they being so secretive? Seems odd.
I don't know, because they didn't show off the Howling Banshee model, despite the fact they actually talked about it a couple of times, about people being on as a Howling Banshee, but they didn't actually show the Howling Banshee model, so it makes me think they might be on that, but you do have to wonder why they were a little bit secretive about that.
Well, yeah, a little bit odd. Maybe they're just trying to hype it up, and that was all planned, and that's my current thinking.
I wouldn't put it past them, to be honest.
Also, the other thing was, I'd have to look back at it more carefully, but that animation is clearly not finished.
Definitely.
The hand didn't sync up with what it was jumping over, etc.
No, definitely not. The taunts aren't done for the Eldar yet either. The Eldar were still using the Space Marine taunts, which looks quite funny, actually.
They, obviously, a patch ago, they put in all of the new voice acting. Have they put in voice acting for Eldar as well?
It doesn't look like it, because it sounded like, you didn't quite hear it correctly on the stream, but it sounded like the Eldar they were using were still using the Space Marine voice pack as well. But I have to wait and see.
Yes, I thought that was the case.
Other stuff that kind of jumped out at me during the live stream, at least, was they're talking about nerfing the Mark of Nurgle, or as they come to call it, the Mark of Nurfle. No news as to how it's being nerfed.
Oh, yeah. That Nathan.
no news to how it's being nerfed yet, but in all honesty and personally, I don't care how it's being nerfed, it's OP and it needs to be nerfed.
I'm going to agree, only because that's what everybody else says, and I am a sheeple, and have no opinion of my own. Nerf Mark of Nurgle.
Put it this way, I've found myself on both sides recently, and being on the Space Marine side and coming up against a traitor assault, I could not, in the amount of shots it takes to take down any other Chaos Marine, you take twice, even three times as much to try and to take down a traitor assault in some cases. Now, obviously, having the Mark of Nurgle means that you regenerate a lot faster, I think, if I remember correctly. But that's just ridiculous.
I'll take your word for it. I haven't had enough experience. In fact, I have never played as Mark of Nurgle or as a Nurgle thing. Really? Assault. Yep, never done it.
Oh, it is really good, actually, to be honest. It has been really good. probably won't be now that they nerf it, but...
But hadn't they already nerfed Mark of Nurgle? Is this a further one?
Pass.
That's fair.
Likely, to be honest. I've got a feeling something like this... I've got a feeling that most of the God Marks are going to be an ongoing process in terms of balancing them. But since the Power Maul came out a couple of weeks back, I've been playing as the Traitor Assault, and I found myself in the midst of combat recently, and I can just go around just beating the hell out of people with the Power Maul. It's pretty awesome.
Nice. Are you enjoying the Power Maul over other close combat weapons?
Yes, definitely. It's become my weapon of choice in terms of Traitor Assault and Ground Assault now, because you get a decent amount of damage on sort of infantry, and you can still attack vehicles with it, so it's really quite nice.
What about Jump Assault or Raptors? Is it there as well? Is it just your close combat weapon of choice for everything, if you could take it?
No, I find... Well, in terms of Jump Assault and Raptors, I've tried to keep it as the Power Fist, just because I'm still trying to give that weapon a chance and trying to find a decent kind of way to use that weapon for myself, at least. Other people may have figured that out already, but I'm trying to find a decent way that I can employ that weapon that doesn't involve me trying to get the drop on people. Yeah, no, I haven't replaced it on my Jump Assault yet, or on my Raptor.
Fair enough.
How about yourself? Have you tried the Power Maul?
So, when I jumped in this week and was thoroughly beaten into the ground, I did select the Power Maul. I didn't get to use it at any point, but I had it. And so I feel that, you know, spiritually, I use the Power Maul. And nice. I love the idea, but I can't really speak to how good it actually is, unfortunately.
Fair enough. they were talking about also having the sorcerers heal faster out of combat as well, in an attempt to try and make them more viable, about as viable as apothecaries are. By all accounts, the sorcerers aren't being used as much as apothecaries are. So I think this buff to the sorcerer will be the first of many, by the sound of it, to try and get those classes being used a little bit more. Have you used the sorcerer much recently?
Wow, I'm a bad person to be on this podcast. No, I have not used the sorcerer much. I did catch them talking about it, and I was going to jump in and just have a quick play around. And I didn't get to do that. So I did, however, notice when I logged in, I assume that everybody has this, or it may just be an AMD thing. You know, when you go to your loadout screens, you now see your character on the right. Mm-hmm. They're really shiny, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. It's not just me. Yeah.
It's not just you.
Yeah. I feel like that should be something quite easy to fix.
Yeah, I think it's just a case of the lighting.
Yeah, I'm sure. But also, I really want to be able to spin my marine.
Yeah, that would be nice, actually.
They really do need to put that in.
I've got a feeling that will come once they update it to the new loadout screen with like the classes and appearance and that sort of stuff on it.
Let's hope so. Oh, well, yeah, I mean, obviously they're going to have to put it in when you're starting to mess around with, you know, adding your appearance stuff, aren't they?
No, that's right. And one other thing that jumped out at me was that apparently they're reducing the lives for defenders on the fortress maps. On the fortress map, sorry. And I have to say, why? Because we know what it's like with a smaller amount of lives. And the fight doesn't last half as long. So I have to ask why they're deciding on that decision, but...
So, what are your thoughts here? Are you thinking... Obviously, they're going to continue to balance it. You know, that's obvious. But are you thinking they're doing this for a specific reason, or are you just completely boggled?
There must be a reason for it. I can't imagine they would make a decision like this just out of thin air without any sort of feedback from the community about it. So obviously, without
you say that, but you never know. You wouldn't put it past.
Yeah, I mean, without knowing what people have said about the lives thing, I can't really comment. In my personal opinion, I think the increase to the lives was a good thing because it did lengthen the fight a little bit, especially considering the fact that with that map right now, the prevailing plan for the force on the attack is pretty much to burn through the lives of the defenders as quickly as possible, so you can just run amok around the map and take the points at your leisure. So, you know, it's a little bit of a... I can't see why they're doing it, but I have to wait and see if it makes a difference in game, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, I would assume that they're trying to get a specific time period for all of their maps to be played in.
Possibly,
whatever that might be, you know, 50 minutes, 20 minutes, 10. And so obviously just manipulating the lives of the defenders is an easy way of doing that. But yeah, if what you're saying is correct, and generally, you know, attackers always win just by grinding out the defenders, then it's a bit odd, and maybe they're going to play with that and win conditions, who knows?
Yeah, we'll have to wait and see, I suppose. But yes, that was the major things that jumped out at myself during Into the Warp. Obviously, head to YouTube and give it a watch, guys. Some very interesting stuff going on in the game now. Moving on to the Warhammer 40,000 universe. Right now, the main site is pretty much kind of the big thing going on right now is next weekend. The 16th of April marks the 30-year anniversary of the release of the Space Marines. Special edition figure will be available that weekend. It looks very good, actually. It's very reminiscent of the original Space Marine designs.
Yeah, I think they did a really good job of making it look like the first Space Marine miniature they ever released, but making it better.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think for achieving their goal, they did a good job. However, I will also say the paint job on that is top notch, and my one is going to look shit. So it's not going to look nearly that good. I think they're tricking us. And actually, the miniature's not as good as we think. But whoever painted it is a god.
It is very, very good, to be honest. This Space Marine is armed with a disintegration pistol, a disintegration combi gun, and combat blade. Which makes me wonder how that would work in-game. But
no, this is new information to me. Do we know, is that supposed to do anything?
Not that I'm aware of, to be honest, but that's what it says. Okay. That's what it says on the website, is what it's armed with. To be honest, to me, it looks, from the look of the model, I would have said that was a melter combi gun, but unless that's what they're...
Well, I mean, I've looked at it, it just looks a bit odd, you know? Like, it doesn't look like anything else to me.
It looks very strange.
Yeah. So, are you going to pick one up? That's the big question.
No, I'm again skint.
yeah. Sadly.
Now that I'm a father, I've given up my rights to buy stuff for myself now. So once the boy gets to a decent age to start Games Workshop, I'll get him into it and then I'll buy him stuff.
Yeah, that's what a lot of people do, to be fair.
Yeah.
As a single person, my question is, do I buy one or multiple?
Well, I'm not sure. £18, so.
They're not cheap for a single figure, but no, obviously they're selling this on the whole. They are available for 2 days only.
Yeah, it's true. Well, the biggest question is, do you order it online or do you go to your local store and see what the hype is like there?
Well, that'll be an interesting one. I know that my local store won't do a discount on these because they're a little bit annoying in that way. And when they feel that they know something will definitely sell because it's limited edition, they don't do their 20% off.
Right. Fair enough.
Which is, I found that out the hard way. But yeah, I'll probably pop down and see if everyone's getting along and talking about, Space Marines or whatever.
Yeah, well, Warhammer World is having an event on the 16th. So if you live near Warhammer World, head down there. They're going to have a number of exclusive Space Marine items, including the new miniature, as well as a book, which is actually, I believe, going to be the new Angels of Death Codex. Which is also available on the website now. That includes a number of things, which is one thing I quite like is the little card set of Adeptus Astartes psychic powers, which includes 4 disciplines usable by every chapter, including the Space Wolves and the Grey Knights, which I love the fact that they just mentioned those two.
Yeah, I assume that's because obviously those guys haven't been able to use psychic powers before.
Yeah. Well, they've always had very different psychic powers, especially like the Space Wolves.
Yes, no, that's true, of course. Yeah.
Apparently the Warhammer World event, you'll also be able to pick up some cool giveaway items, which include badges and art prints and stuff like that. They also have a little question there. So, do you still have your first Space Marine you ever painted? If so, bring it along. And we'll take a photo to show off your memories on Facebook. So do you remember your first Space Marine you painted there, Octa?
Oh, I do. It was a standard Space Marine from the second edition box set. The one that came with Blood Angels and Orcs, Goth Orcs. And I painted it Blood Angel. It was red. As it should be, as all Marines should be, really. And yeah, it was terrible. I could not paint. I'm sure if I saw it now, I would have thrown it away. And to that point, in fact, yeah, I remember it, but it has definitely been thrown away because I am not a sentimental person. I'm like, I need space in my cupboard. What can I throw away? There you go.
Old models, there you go.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, no, I have to say I started on the second edition as well. But when me and my friends first got into it, we all kind of got into it at the same time. We all loved the Space Marines, but we were also individualistic that we didn't want to have the same armies. So we had a look through all the armies available at the time, and we all kind of decided which ones that we'd do. And I instantly said, I'm doing Space Wolves. I love the look of those guys. They're amazing. So the first thing I got was a blood claw box. And the first one I painted was the leader of the squad, which had like a mohawk. I thought that was pretty cool. So I painted that.
Did they actually do... when did they start doing Space Wolves as their own separate figures? Was it all the way back in second?
I believe so, yeah. Because I do remember that was the first thing I picked up was a box of Spacewalks. There wasn't a great deal of difference between them, except the fact that the leaders had, like, special heads. That was about it. And the odd wolf tail here and there. So there wasn't really a great deal of difference. Not like there is now. They did do a couple of different boxes
for the Spacewalks themselves.
But yeah.
Yeah, you know, now that you're mentioning it, I can kind of picture that old box, you know, where it's grey on the outsides, and then you have that little golden rim, and then you have your miniatures just stood on a plain grass mat. I seem to remember Blood Claws, and they had the long fangs.
Yep.
I feel like you could buy them. Yeah. And Bjorn the Fell-Handed, I seem to remember a Dreadnought as well.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah. No, it's all coming back to me now.
Yes, I still have that model sitting in one of my my model boxes, my cases.
Well, you don't need to replace him. That's a solid model.
Exactly. Indeed. I would like to ask the audience, actually, do you remember your first Space Marine figure you ever painted? And do you still have it? If so, let us know. VoxArcona@gmail.com. And we shall see if we can come up with something for that. It'd be quite interesting.
Should we explain in a little bit more detail what exactly the new Angels of Death codex is going to be?
Yes, actually, that was the next thing I was gonna come onto there, actually.
I do apologise. If you would like to introduce it again.
No, by all means, you take this one, Otter.
Okay. So, next supplement for Codex Space Marines. 128-page softback supplement, which is a new thing that Games Workshop is doing. They're trying to move all of their supplements to softbacks, sell them at £20, a little bit cheaper, you know, make the things a little bit more affordable. I know a lot of people like this. I personally love the hardback books, but that's just me. I'm weird. I know a lot of people love the move to softback.
I love the hardbacks, but I just can't afford them.
Well, no, that's true. Yeah, obviously they're adding like £10 to, or sometimes even more, to the book, which is a little bit extortionate. But anyway, so Angels of Death. These are the strike forces of the Space Marines, the finest warriors mankind has ever known. Space Marines stride boldly across the galaxy, taking no prisoners, roaring benedictions to the Emperor as they cleanse planets and systems of alien filth. As the enemies of humanity rise and gather, the Space Marines will be there to meet them with bolters primed and chainsaws screaming. Each Space Marine is a genetically engineered master of combat, sworn to perform his duty to the Emperor until victory or death. Which I think we all knew, but that's what the fluff says. Anyway. Now, this 128-page softback supplement for Codex Space Marines is designed for any and all Space Marines armies. Included within, we have a guide to strike forces and chapter organization, including 4 army list entry data sheets and 14 formations. Now, obviously, that's going to be very interesting, and if you play the game, 14 new formations could be absolutely mind-boggling, this could... 14 formations is enough to make Space Marines the most powerful army, depending on what happens in those formations, obviously. We also get background and organization. Yes, oh yeah. I mean, formations can be completely overpowered these days. Who knows what they're going to do? We also get background and organization on White Scars, Imperial Fists, Iron Hands, Salamanders, and Raven Guard chapters, as well as their typical strike forces. Don't quite know what that means, but I assume that a strike force may be a new type of formation, possibly.
Possibly. Yeah. I think they have. Haven't they had box sets that have been dubbed strike forces in the past?
Ooh, it's possible. It's possible. Yeah. I believe it. Sure.
I believe so.
Then we're also getting rules for the Terminator Captain, Cataphracti Terminators, and Contemptor Dreadnought. Now, this threw me a little bit. Because aren't Cataphracti Terminators and Contempt to Dreadnoughts 30k?
I was going to say, that's a heresy thing, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it is. So I don't know what that's doing in there.
Interesting.
Perhaps, very interestingly, as you say, we can now have rules for using Cataphracti and Contemptors in 40k.
Perhaps.
Officially. Because if they put it into this supplement, then it's 100% official. You can use it as part of your Space Marine 40k army. That would be interesting.
Definitely.
Then we're also getting Warlord traits, relics, and tactical objectives. And then, it's psychic disciplines available to all Space Marine librarians. And that's it.
Cool. Yes, so I did notice actually that they've also got a couple of other Codex supplements coming out, one for the Black Legion and one for the Crimson Slaughter, which, if anyone knows the box sets that have been coming out over the last 6 months to a year or so, the Crimson Slaughter was introduced in one of the box sets and everyone was like, who the hell are the Crimson Slaughter? So yes, now we know. There is a there is going to be a Codex supplement for those, which will be very interesting.
Well, these have all been released before as hardbacks. These are re-releases in softbacks now.
Yeah, yeah. But no, that'd be pretty good to read. I've not really experienced the Crimson Slaughter myself, so.
Yeah, they were the first chapter for Space Marines released in Sixth Ed. Dark Vengeance, that's the name of it.
That's what it's called. Yes, indeed. Cool. So yes, as I say, if you remember the first Space Marine figure you ever painted, or if you still have it, let us know, voxarcona@gmail.com. If you plan on getting the special edition figure or this new Angels of Death Codex supplement, again, let us know. Yeah, that should be interesting. In terms of video games, Battlefleet Gothic has a new trailer for the Eldar Forces out. Have you watched that yet?
Yes, I have. What did you think of it, though?
Oh, they're very pretty.
pretty. They're pretty, and I really liked it. It was a really good trailer.
Yeah, it was.
I'm not sure how they're actually going to play. I know that it's been said before that they will have this sort of warp jump and they will be much faster than other things, other factions. Now obviously the trailer given to us was a little bit cinematic, if you will. I'm really excited.
Certainly, I did like the fact that it kind of carried on from the Orc one quite well.
Yes. And if you listen to it, because obviously at the end of it you get the Eldar talking. It kind of sounds like that may be a little bit of a spoiler, if you will, for the single player campaign. Like, we are going to meet the Eldar and potentially help them. Or them help us, probably.
I did like the line at the end where he says, it's a pleasure to meet you, for the Emperor is with you, isn't he?
Well, those cheeky Eldar. You've got to let them have a little snipe at you. Yeah.
I did think that was quite nice. I did have a look and see what was going on in terms of other video games. There's not really a great deal going on right now, but I failed to notice last month that it was GDC 2016. There was a few YouTubers that did some like previewing of Eisenhorn Xenos. Which is a new mobile game that'll be coming out, and that looks pretty good, to be honest. That's looking pretty nice. Have you seen that game yet, Octo?
I have not. No. Give me a rundown.
It seems to be a third-person style sort of action game, obviously based around like the Eisenhorn character, and it looks like it's taking its cues from the books, the Eisenhorn trilogy. Xenos, Hereticus, and Malleus, it seems to be following his life, basically. It's got some very interesting mechanics in it. If I remember correctly, from the original trailers they did, there's quite an interesting detection system, very akin to what was it called, Assassin's Creed, and a lot of other stealth games out at the moment. But it's well worth looking up on YouTube if you get a chance. Have a look for Eisenhorn Xenos trailers or tech demo or something. I can't remember what it was now, but it was at one of the big events last year.
No, yep. As you've been talking, I've pulled it up and I'm going to watch that as soon as I leave, because that's
well
be
worth
fun.
It. It is looking really nice, to be honest.
But you say it's a mobile game?
Yes, it's going to be on the mobile platforms.
That saddens me greatly.
Yeah.
But okay, that's fine.
I hope they decide to port it across, because I can see that being really good. And to be honest, I would rather play that than Inquisitor Marta.
Well, from what we saw last week, yeah, I'd agree.
As much as I am a Diablo fan, I do love the Diablo series. I'm not liking the look of Inquisitor Marta.
I'm still holding out hope. Haven't given up on it yet. You know, it's early days. It wasn't even in alpha yet. So.
That's true.
But well, yeah, I'm. Yeah.
Yeah. We shall see. We shall see. Cool. So that brings us on to the Imperial Data Slate. And we shall be covering Tzeentch this week. And as always, we start off with a quote. The minds of gods are not for mortals to know or to judge, except that Tzeentch has a place for us all in his grand scheme, and be happy in the part you have to play. Magnus the Red. So, Tzeentch represents the vitality and volatility of change, and is closely associated with sorcery and magic, as well as dynamic mutation and grand convoluted scheming. The domains of history, destiny, intrigue, and plots are his chief interests, and in pursuit of these aspects, he listens to the dreams and hopes of all and watches their plans take form. He is not content to merely observe, however, and chooses to interfere in the schemes of fate in order to fulfill his own unknowably complex schemes. Tzeentch is known by an endless multitude of names, but the chief titles he bears are the Changer of the Ways, the Master of Fortune, the Great Conspirator, and the Architect of Fate. Tzeentch was created and is sustained by the desire for change that is an essential part of nearly all mortal life. Almost all species are aware of the concept of a better tomorrow, and any form of dreaming, imagining, or resolution for change empowers the Chaos God. The spark for wishing for a different existence can turn into a fire that can change a country, a world, and perhaps ultimately an inferno that can alter the fate of the galaxy itself. This is Tzeentch. Magic is essentially an expression of change driven by will, and is, as such, is the domain of the Changer of the Ways. Tzeentch is the greatest magician in all of the warp. Many of those drawn to his auspices are sorcerers, while many others will be gifted with sorcerous powers as a reward of their actions. Tzeentch's demonic aspects are essentially creatures of magic, rather than any sort of conventionally understandable physicality. As well as an interest in magic, Tzeentch takes keen notice of all plots and plans. As the Great Conspirator, he is aware of all the dreams and plans of mortals. This is how Tzeentch is able to perceive the future, by being aware of all that is planned and all that may potentially happen. He can see all possible fates. Tzeentch has as many depictions as he has names. His skin is said to constantly shift and roll with faces that leer and express mockery. As Tzeentch speaks, these faces repeat what he says, but with different inflections, or a word different here and there, or in fact provide running commentary or analysis on what he is saying. This makes it almost impossible to be certain what meaning Tzeentch is actually expressing. While these skin faces come and go very quickly, Tzeentch's actual body is said to be constant. His head is low on his chest, as if he had no neck, and horns project from his shoulders. Raw magical energy surrounds him like smoke, with the faces and bodies of those whose fates he is considering manifesting before him in subtle and complex patterns. Tzeentch's opposite force in the Chaos Pantheon is Nurgle, who stands for despair and the acceptance of one's fate. Such a form of existence is anathema to Tzeentch, whose power derives from the will to change one's destiny. So that brings us to the followers of Tzeentch. The mortal champions of Tzeentch are especially dangerous, as well as they often wield awesome sorcerous power on top of their considerable physical prowess. Professors, philosophers, scientists, intellectuals, and artists also swell Tzeentch's ranks. For as much as the Changer of the Ways embraces magic and guile, he also loves knowledge in all its forms. Predictably, Tzeentch finds those who investigate forbidden or taboo subjects particularly interesting, as individuals willing to defy convention and perhaps even ethics and the law to pursue their intellectual ambitions often make willing and effective servants. Some thinkers who reach a stumbling block in their scholarly pursuits can become obsessed with a particular problem or question. These scholars may try any number of approaches to find answers, but no experiment, no amount of research or consultation with experts, and no amount of sweat and elbow grease brings them closer to a solution. These obsessed scholars are particularly vulnerable to Tzeentch's temptations. While some may deliberately seek the assistance of the Master of Fate, many more unwittingly fall into Tzeentch's service, after accepting help from an insightful but mysterious new colleague, or after gazing too long at a classified or forbidden text that somehow finds its way onto their desk. The demons of Tzeentch are inherently magical creatures, even more so than their other demons of chaos. They appear ephemeral, transparent, or as if made of light. Their very presence can alter the rules of reality, and they can leave trails of multicolored fire and mist behind them as they move. So firstly we have the Lord of Change, the greater demon of Tzeentch, gangly, winged, and feathered like a bird. They are humanoid demons of vast intelligence and massive sorcerous and psychic power. Although they lack the physical strength of other greater demons, indirect action is their preference, manipulating things from the shadows. Minor heretics, dedicated cults of revolutionaries, the actions of planetary governors, inquisitors, and even other demons have all been the victims of the subtle manipulations of Lord of Change. Lords of Change are actually most notable for their gaze, walking portals to the mind of Tzeentch. Their eyes are gateways to the madness of fate. Few mortals can withstand the gaze of a Lord of Change. The horrors are next, the common demons of Tzeentch. Fashioned from raw warp stuff and used as slaves by the Lord of Change, they come in two types, chiefly identified by coloration, pink horrors and blue horrors. Arguably the most bizarre of all demons in appearance, horrors of Tzeentch manifest as an ever-changing mass of shifting, gangly limbs with a central torso that normally sports a cackling or leering face in the center, though the horror's face can vanish and randomly reappear elsewhere on their body. And the Flamers are next, the demonic servants of Tzeentch, with numerous gaping maws that produce the searing flames which give these demons their name. The body of a Flamer is a headless conical torso. It has two long arms, both terminating in weird stumps, which are adorned with razor-sharp teeth and flickering tongues that continuously belch acrid and sulfuric smoke. Flamers move by bumping and hopping around, leaping into the air in a gravity-defying and comical fashion. They are also known as the Pyrodemons of Tzeentch, keepers of the true flame of change, or Candelabra Mutationi. The Screamers, the demonic beasts of Tzeentch, are next. These soar through the warp in groups, searching for souls to devour. Often referred to as sky sharks, Screamers are very agile due to their ability to fly, and possess a feral but cunning intelligence. Which leads us to the discs of Tzeentch. Screamers that are chosen to serve as mounts for a champion of Tzeentch are bound in magnificent bands and blades and turned into discs of Tzeentch. These flying demonic steeds are tied to the will of their masters, combining their great mobility and calculated thinking. And finally we have the Maze of Tzeentch. And the Maze of Tzeentch, also known as the Crystal Labyrinth, is Tzeentch's realm within the warp. This maze is woven from the raw fabric of magic, threaded upon deceit and conspiracy. Of all the landscapes of the warp, This domain is by far the most bizarre and incomprehensible, for its crystalline structures force travellers to view all nine dimensions simultaneously. This effect not only distorts the senses of any who intrude, but will also pull apart their purpose and aspirations, and turns them to insanity and despair. Unlike the realms of other gods of chaos, it is not defended by demonic warriors, allowing instead for any intruder to become inevitably lost within its confines. Interchanging, shifting avenues made of pure crystals of every colour crisscross Zeech's realm. Hidden pathways built from lies and schemes lead out from the maze and infiltrate the dominions of other gods, binding together the fractious realms of chaos. The maze itself has no demonic defenders, as previously mentioned. Its own illusory passages are enough of a barrier to any intruder not possessed of the strongest mind imaginable. Its glittering corridors reflect not only light, but also hope, misery, dreams, and nightmares. The labyrinth does not merely reflect, but also distorts, pulling apart hope and purpose, turning them into insanity and despair. Driven by Zeech's unconscious schemes, the labyrinth constantly moves and rearranges. Those lost within the maze's reaches will wander for eternity with their minds shattered, their dreams broken upon the wheel of their own failed ambition. At the centre of the maze, hidden from those who have not the insane insight to find it, stands the impossible fortress. The architecture of the bastion is constantly replaced by new and ever more maddening spires, gates and walls, doors, and other entrances yawn open like starving mouths before clamping for eternity moments later, barring all access. Within the fortress, time and space does not exist at all, and gravity shifts and changes, or disappears altogether. Lights of every colour, some even unknown in the real universe, springs from the shifting walls. For mortals, who are so locked in their physical ways, the fortress is impenetrable. Men are driven insane, while their bodies might implode or be pulled apart by the forces unleashed by Zeech's passing thoughts. Even immortal demons cannot easily endure the twisted horror of the impossible fortress, and only the Lords of Change can safely navigate its corridors and tread the secret paths that lead to the inner sanctum of the fortress, the hidden library where Zeech, the puppet master himself, resides, plotting eternally. So yes, that's the information on Zeech. As I mentioned in a previous episode, personally I quite like Zeech. He's quite an interesting deity. He's got some very interesting background to him. If you haven't read about the Chaos Gods, there's a lot of information on Lexicanium. Well worth a read. There's some very, very interesting stuff there. And that leads us to Dedications of the Faithful. Again, we haven't received quite enough reviews for iTunes to display an average. So please, guys, if you have 5 minutes of your time today, please take just a few minutes of that to leave us a review on iTunes, preferably 5 stars. Hey, and let us know how we're doing. And that brings us to the thought for the day, which is, do not ask which creature screams in the night. Do not question who waits for you in the shadow. It is my cry that wakes you in the night, and my body that crouches in the shadow. I am Zeech, and you are the puppet that dances to my tune. I have been Gigamite. He has been Octa. We are Vox Arcana, and we shall see you again.
The Adeptus Terra thanks you for tuning into tonight's broadcast of Vox Arcana, a production of Holosuite Media. Be sure to check our website, iTunes, or Stitcher Satellite Radio for our remastered Voxcasts and more. You can follow us on Twitter at Vox Arcana. Or if you have any questions or comments, please send an email to voxarcona@gmail.com. Return next week for yet another communique from the Vox Arcana.